I knew by the first evening that I had done something foolish to volunteer for this study. My first priority was to get out as soon as possible. That is what you did in prison if you had the vaguest possibility of it. And this was a real prison, run by psychologists and not by the state. I met this challenge by going on a hunger strike, to refuse to eat anything, to get sick, and they would have to release 416. That is the plan that I stuck to, no matter what the consequences. At dinner, although he was now very hungry, 416 followed his plan to refuse to eat anything. Hellman. Hey guys, we got nice hot sausages for your dinner tonight. 416, glibly.
Not for me, sir. I refuse to eat any food you give me.
Hellman. That is a rule violation, for which you will be punished accordingly. 416.
It does not matter. I will not eat your sausages.
As punishment, Hellman puts 416 into the hole for his first of many visits there, and Burdan insists that he hold each of the sausages in his hand. After the others finish dinner, 416 has to sit and stare at his food, a plate of two cold sausages. This unexpected act of rebellion infuriates the night shift guards, and especially Hellman, who had thought that tonight everything was under strict control and would be flowing smoothly after last night's problems were resolved. Now this pain in the ass is making trouble and might incite the others to rebel just when it seemed as if they were totally dominated and submissive. Hellman,
you don't want to eat two stinking sausages? You want me to take those sausages and cram them up your ass? Is that what you want? Do you want me to take that and cram that up your ass?
416 remains stoic, staring down expressionless at the plate of sausages. Hellman realizes that it is time to put the divide-and-conquer tactic into operation.
Now listen here, 416. If you do not eat your sausages, that is an act of prisoner insubordination that will result in all prisoners being deprived of visitors tonight. Hear that?
I am sorry to hear that. My personal actions should have no consequences for the others.
416 replies in an imperious manner.
They're not personal, but prisoner reactions, and I will determine the consequences, shouts Hellman.
Burdan brings out Hubby 7258 to persuade 416 to eat his sausages. 7258 says,
Just eat your sausages, okay?
Burdan adds, Tell him why. 7258 continues, pleading that the prisoners won't get visiting hours if he doesn't eat the sausages.
Don't you care about that? Just 'cause you don't got no friends. Eat for the prisoners, not for the guards, okay?
Burden throws in this uppercut, pitting 416 against the other prisoners. Prisoner Hubby, 7258, continues talking to 416, gently trying to get him to eat the sausages, because his girlfriend, Mary Ann, is about to visit him soon, and he would hate to be denied that privilege because of a few lousy sausages. Burdan continues to assume more of Hellman's demeanor in his domineering style and substance.
416, what's your problem? Answer me, boy! Yeah, what's your problem?
416 begins to explain that he is on a hunger strike to protest the abusive treatment and contract violations.
What the hell has that got to do with the sausages? Well, what?
Burdan is furious and slams his club down on the table with such a resounding thud that it echoes around the yard walls in menacing reverberations.
Answer my question. Why don't you eat the sausages?
In a barely audible voice, 416 continues to make a Gandhi nonviolent protest statement. Burdan never heard of Mahatma Gandhi and insists on a better reason.
You tell me the connection between those two things. I don't see it.
Then 416 breaks the illusion, reminding those within earshot that the guards are violating the contract he signed when he volunteered for this experiment. I am stunned that this reminder is ignored by them all. The guards are now totally absorbed in their illusory prison.
I don't give a damn about any contract, Burdan yells. You're in here because you deserve it, 416. That's how you got in here in the first place. You broke the law. This ain't no nursery school. I still don't understand why you don't eat those damn sausages. Did you expect this to be a nursery school, 416? Do you expect to go around breaking the law and wind up in a nursery school?
Verdan rants on about 416 not going to be a happy boy when his cellmate has to sleep without a bed on the floor tonight. However, just as it seems that Verdan is about to take a swing at 416, he turns away in a fury. Instead, he slaps his club into the palm of his hand and orders 416,
"Get back into that hole!"
416 now knows the way. Verdan bangs his fists against the door of the hole, making a deafening sound that reverberates inside that dark closet.
"Now each of you also thank 416 for his denying your visitors by banging on the hole and saying thank you."
Each prisoner does so, banging on the closet door with relish, except for 5486, Jerry, who does so unwillingly. Hubby 7258 is extremely angry by this unexpected twist of his fate. To underscore the point, Hellman pulls 416 out of the hole, still gripping the two sausages. He then runs another tormenting count single-handedly, not even giving Verdan a chance to participate. Goodguard, Landry, is nowhere in sight. Here is Hellman's chance to break any possibility of prisoner solidarity and to defuse 416's potential emergence as a rebellious hero.
"Now you all are going to suffer because this prisoner refuses to do a simple thing like eat his dinner, for no good reason. It would be different if he was a vegetarian. Tell him to his face what you think about him."
Some say, "Don't be so stupid." Others accuse him of being childish. That was not good enough for John Wayne.
"Tell him that he's a pussy."
A few of them obey, but not Sarge. As a matter of principle, Sarge refuses to use any obscenity. Now, with two of them defying Hellman at the same time, Hellman turns his wrath against Sarge, harassing him mercilessly, yelling at him that he is an asshole, and, worse, insisting that he call 416 a bastard. The harsh count continues unabated for an hour, stopping only when visitors are at the door. I come on the yard and make it clear to the guards that visiting hours must be honored. They are not pleased with this intrusion into their power domain, but reluctantly acquiesce. There is always the post-visitor time for them to continue breaking down prisoner resistance. Obedient prisoners get visitors. Two of the more obedient prisoners, Hubby 7258 and Sarge 2093, who have friends or relatives in the vicinity, are allowed to have them visit for a short time this evening. 7258 is deliriously happy when his pretty girlfriend arrives to see him. She is giving him news about their other friends, and he is listening intently, holding his head in his two hands. All the while, Verdan is sitting above them on the table, routinely banging his small white billy club. We had to return the big dark ones we had borrowed from the local police department. Verdan is obviously taken with her beauty and breaks into their conversation frequently with questions and comments. Hubby tells Marianne that it is important to try to keep yourself up. It's not that bad in here if you just cooperate. Girlfriend: are you cooperating? 7258, laughing: yeah, they're making me. Verdan intrudes: well, they had a little escape attempt. Girlfriend:
I heard about that.
7258:
I didn't enjoy the rest of this day at all. We did not have anything. No bed, no nothing.
He tells her about having to clean out stickers from dirty blankets and other nasty chores. Nevertheless, he remains upbeat and smiles and holds her hand for the full 10-minute visit. Verdan escorts her out as the prisoner returns to his lonely cell. The other prisoner granted a visitor is Sarge, whose father comes by. Sarge is bragging about his total command of the rules.
"There are 17 rules. I have the rules memorized. The most basic rule is that you obey the guards."
Dad: can they tell you to do anything? Sarge:
yes. Well, almost anything.
Dad:
and what right do they have to do that?
He rubs his forehead in seeming distress at his son's plight. He is the second visitor to be clearly upset. He is much like the mother of prisoner Rich, 1037, who was right to be concerned, given that he broke down the next day. Nevertheless, Sarge appears to be made of sterner stuff. Sarge.
They're in charge of the running of the prison.
Dad asks about civil rights, and then Berdan jumps in, very harshly.
He has no civil rights.
Dad.
Well, I think that they do, maybe.
We can't hear clearly his argument to Berdan, who is not afraid of this civilian. Berdan.
People in prison have no civil rights.
Dad, exasperated.
Anyway, how long do we have to talk here?
Only 10 minutes, Berdan replies.
The father disputes the amount of time left. Berdan relents and gives them 5 more minutes. Dad would like more privacy.
That is not permitted for visitors in this prison, replies Berdan.
Dad gets even more upset, but remarkably, he too goes by the rules and accepts this infringement on his rights by a kid play-acting being a guard. Dad asks more about the rules. Sarge talks about counts, exercising, chores, and lights out.
Dad. Is this what you expected it to be?
Sarge.
I expected it to be worse.
In disbelief, Dad exclaims,
Worse? Why worse?
Berdan interjects himself again. The father is now clearly annoyed by his unwanted presence. The guard tells him that there were originally 9 prisoners, but now there are only 5. The father asks why. Sarge.
2 have been paroled, and 2 are in maximum security.
Dad.
Maximum security where?
He doesn't really know. Dad asks why they are in maximum security. Sarge.
There were disciplinary problems, very dispositional.
Berdan responds at the same time.
Because they were very bad.
Dad.
Do you feel like you're in a prison?
Sarge, laughing, sidesteps a direct answer.
Well, I've never been in a prison before.
Dad laughs. They are alone when Berdan runs off in response to a loud noise outside. While he's gone, they talk about Sarge's coming up for parole, which he is sure he will get because he has been the most obedient prisoner to date. However, he still has a major concern.
I don't know what the criteria are for getting out on parole.
Time's up,
Jeff Landry announces. Father and son stand up, about to hug, but settle instead for a firm, manly handshake and a see you soon. Homophobia rears its ugly head. When I return from a quick dinner at the student cafeteria, I see Troublemaker 5704 standing in the center of the yard, holding a chair on his head. A chair on his head! Hellman is yelling at Sarge, and Berdan is chiming in. Good prisoner Jerry, 5486, who has been almost anonymous, is standing passively against the wall, while 7258 does push-ups. Apparently 416 is back in solitary. Hellman asks 5704 why he has that chair on his head. It was he who ordered him to wear it like a hat. The prisoner answers meekly that he is simply following orders. He looks dejected. All of the old spunk seems to have drained away from 5704. Berdan tells him not to look so stupid and to put the chair away. Then Berdan bangs on the hole door with his club.
You having a good time in there, 416?
It is time for Hellman to take over as director of tonight's drama. He literally moves Berdan aside. No sight of good guard Jeff Landry on the yard following the visits.
Well, you got your hands in the air, 7258. Why don't you play Frankenstein? 2093, you can be the bride of Frankenstein. You stand right here. You go over there, he says to Sarge.
Sarge asks whether he should act it out.
Of course you should act it out. You be the bride of Frankenstein. 7258, you be Frankenstein. I want you to walk over here like Frankenstein walks and say that you love 2093.
As 7258 starts to walk toward his bride, Berdan stops him in his tracks.
That ain't no Frankenstein walk. We didn't ask you to walk like you.
Hellman grabs Hubby, 7258, by the arm very aggressively, pulls him back, and makes him walk the proper Frankenstein walk. 7258. I love you, 2093.
Get up close! Get up close! Shouts Berdan.
7258 is now inches away from Sarge. I love you, 2093. Hellman pushes them together, his hands on each of their backs until their bodies are touching. Again, Hubby, Frankenstein, 7258, says, I love you, 2093. Hellman berates Sarge for smiling.
Did I tell you that you could smile? This is not funny. You get down and do 10 push-ups.
With prisoner 7258's arms still stretched out in front of him, back to the wall, his smock lifts, revealing part of his genitals. Sarge is told to tell the other prisoner, Jerry, 5486, that he loves him. He complies reluctantly.
Well, ain't that sweet? Ain't that sweet?
Mocks Berdan. Hellman now gets up in the face of 5486.
Are you smiling? Maybe you love him, too. Would you go over there and tell him so?
Jerry, 5486, does so without hesitation, but says quietly,
2093, I love you.
Hellman is careening wildly from prisoner to prisoner with his verbal attacks.
Put your arms down, 7258. That's why you stink so much. Now, all of you stinking prisoners, get down on the floor. You're going to play leapfrog.
They start to play the game but are having difficulty because their shower clogs are falling off and their smocks are creeping up to expose their genitals as they jump over the bent bodies of their fellows. They can't do it right, and Berdan seems a bit uncomfortable with this game. Perhaps he finds the action too sexual or too gay for his tastes. Hellman simplifies the game, directing only 2093 and 5704 to play together. They continue to try to leapfrog as Berdan emits little groans. The homoerotic game is having a perverse impact on Hellman.
That's the way dogs do it, isn't it? Isn't that the way dogs do it? He's all ready, ain't he? Standing behind you, doggy style. Why don't you make like a dog?
When tall prisoner Paul, 5704, had brought up complaints of guards hassling prisoners, I'll bet that the head of the Stanford County Jail Prisoners Grievance Committee never imagined that the guards' insulting abuse would ever descend to this level. He's clearly upset, and he tells John Wayne that what he has been asked to do would be a little obscene. Hellman takes that remark as a slap in the face.
I think your face is a little obscene, too. Why don't you just play leapfrog and shut up?
Jeff Landry drifts onto the scene, standing directly behind 5704 and watching everything. He is obviously interested in this turn of events, but he keeps his hands in his pockets to maintain his neutrality and pose of indifference. He is not wearing his anonymity-enhancing sunglasses, even though the warden told him to do so.
I'm sorry to offend the better nature of this sensitive prisoner,
Hellman says with derision. Berdan succeeds in ending this game, which he has found distasteful from the beginning.
I'm tired of this game. This is ridiculous.
They revert to their more traditional game, the count. Sarge reveals a new moral identity. Hellman is bored. He walks up and down the line of weary prisoners. Suddenly, he whirls around and turns his wrath on Sarge.
Why are you such an ass-licker?
I don't know, sir.
Why is it you try to be obedient so much?
Sarge is not afraid of him and plays the game.
It's in my nature to be obedient, Mr. Correctional Officer.
You're a liar. You are a stinking liar.
If you say so, Mr. Correctional Officer.
Hellman becomes ever more obscene, maybe aroused by the previous sexual games.
What if I told you to get down on that floor and fuck the floor? What would you do then?
I would tell you I didn't know how, Mr. Correctional Officer.
What if I told you to come over here and hit your friend 5704 in the face as hard as you could?
Sarge holds his ground.
I'm afraid I would be unable to do that, Mr. Correctional Officer.
Hellman scoffs and turns away, only to spin about and turn on a new victim. As he opens the door to the hole, Hellman, like a carnival pitchman, shouts,
"I got something right here for everyone. Why don't you take a look at this man? 416, don't you go anywhere."
416 blinks out of the darkness at the assembled prisoners and guards who are all looking at him. He is holding a sausage in each hand. Berdan,
"How come you holding on to your sausages, 416?
"He hasn't ate no sausages yet," Hellman says, his usually good grammar breaking down as he becomes more emotional. "And you know what that means for the rest of you?"
The prisoners respond knowingly in the negative.
"No blanket tonight."
"That's right. It means no blankets tonight for all of you. Come over here one at a time and try to say something to 416 to get him to eat those sausages. Let's start with you, 5486.
The prisoner walks to the door, looks 416 in the eyes, and tells him gently,
"You eat those sausages if you want to, 416.
"That's sure a half-assed way to tell him to do something, 5486, Berdan admonishes. "I guess you don't want your blankets tonight. Next up, 7258, you tell him."
In sharp contrast to the first prisoner in line, 7258 yells at the rebel inmate,
"Eat your sausages, 416, or I'll kick your ass!"
Hellman is pleased at the expression of inmate enmity, and he grins from ear to ear.
"Now that's more like it. 5486, you come over here and do it again. Tell him you're gonna kick his ass if he don't eat those sausages."
He now meekly complies.
2093, come over here and tell him you're gonna kick his ass.
Sarge makes a moving statement.
"I'm sorry, sir. I will not use a profane word toward another human being."
"Just what do you object to?"
"I object to the word that you used."
Hellman tries to get him to say ass, but his tricks don't work.
"Which word? Kick? You don't want to say kick? Is that what it is? Then what the hell are you talking about?"
Sarge tries to clarify himself, but Hellman cuts him off.
"I gave you an order."
Hellman is becoming frustrated by Sarge's refusal to follow his orders. For the first time, the seemingly mindless robot has shown he has backbone and soul.
"Now you get over there and tell him what I told you to tell him."
Sarge continues to apologize, but remains firm.
"I'm sorry, Mr. Correctional Officer. I am not capable of doing it."
"Well, you're not capable of having a bed tonight. Is that what you want to say?"
Standing his ground, Sarge makes clear his values.
"I would prefer to go without a bed than to say that, Mr. Correctional Officer."
Hellman is steaming. He paces a few steps away and then turns back towards Sarge, as though he were going to whack him for his insubordination in front of this entire audience. Good guard Jeff Landry, sensing the eruption, offers a compromise.
"Go over and say you're going to kick him in the end, then."
"Yes, Mr. Correctional Officer," says Sarge.
He then walks over and says to 416,
"Eat your sausages, or I'll kick you in the end."
Landry asks,
"Do you mean it?"
"Yes. No, Mr. Correctional Officer. I'm sorry, I don't mean it."
Berdan asks why he's lying.
"I did what the correctional officer told me to say, sir."
Hellman comes to the defense of his fellow officer.
"He didn't tell you to lie."
Berdan realizes that Sarge is getting the upper hand by holding fast to his high moral ground, and it could have an effect on the others. He deftly turns things around and down.
"Nobody wants you to do any lying in here, 2093, so why don't you do some lying on the ground?"
He makes Sarge lie on the floor, face down, with his arms spread out.
"Now start giving us some push-ups from your position."
Hellman joins in.
5704, you go over and sit on his back.
After more direction from Hellman on how he should do push-ups from such a position, Sarge is strong enough to do so.
"And don't help him. Now, do a push-up. 5486, you sit on his back too, facing the other way."
He hesitates.
"Let's go! On top of his back, now!"
He complies. Together, the guards force Sarge to do a push-up with both prisoners 5486 and 5704 sitting on his back. They do so without any hesitation. Sarge struggles with all his might and pride to complete a push-up cycle. He strains to raise himself from the floor, but then collapses under the weight of this human burden. The devilish duo bursts into laughter, making fun of Sarge. They are not quite done humiliating Sarge, but 416's stubborn resistance against eating his sausages is of greater immediate consequence to these guards. Hellman intones,
"I just don't understand a thing like those sausages, 416. I don't understand how we can have so many counts and so many good times. We do it so nice, and tonight we just fuck it up. Why is that?"
While Hellman seeks a simple answer, Burdan is quietly talking with 416 about the sausages, trying another soft sell tactic.
"How do they taste?"
I know you'd like 'em once you tasted 'em."
Hellman repeats his question more loudly, in case anyone has not heard it.
"Why do we have so many good counts, and then you try to fuck up tonight?"
As Hellman goes down the line for explicit answers, 7258 responds,
"I don't know. I guess we're just bastards, Mr. Correctional Officer."
Sarge answers,
"I really wouldn't know, Mr. Correctional Officer."
Hellman seizes upon another chance to get back at Sarge for his earlier victorious subordination.
"Are you a bastard?"
"If you say so, Mr. Correctional Officer."
"If I say so, I want you to say it."
Sarge is steadfast.
"I'm sorry, sir. I object to the use of the language, sir. I cannot say it."
Burdan jumps in.
"You just said you couldn't say that stuff to other human beings, 2093. But this is a different question. You can't say it to yourself?"
Sarge counters,
"I consider myself a human being, sir."
Burdan,
"You consider yourself another human being?"
Sarge,
"I made the statement that I could not say it to another human being."
Burdan,
"And that includes yourself?"
Sarge replies in an even, measured, carefully phrased way, as though in a college debate. And in this situation, where he has been the target of such abuse, says,
"The statement initially would not have included myself, sir. I would not think of saying it to myself. The reason is that because I would be..."
He sighs and then trails off, mumbling, becoming emotionally battered. Hellman,
"So that means you would be a bastard, wouldn't you?"
Sarge,
"No, mister..."
Hellman,
"Yes, you would."
Sarge,
"Yes, if you say so, Mr. Correctional Officer."
Burdan,
"You'd be saying very nasty things about your mother. That's what you'd be doing, 2093.
Burdan obviously wants a piece of the action, but Hellman wants to run the game himself and does not appreciate his sidekick's intrusions. Hellman,
"What would you be? What would you be? Would you be a bastard?"
Sarge,
"Yes, Mr. Correctional Officer."
Hellman,
"Well, let me hear you say it."
Sarge,
"I'm sorry, sir. I will not say it."
Hellman,
"Why the hell won't you say it?"
Sarge,
"Because I do not use any profane language."
Hellman,
"Well, why did you apply it to yourself?
What are you?"
Sarge,
"I'm whatever you wish me to be, Mr. Correctional Officer."
Hellman,
"Well, if you say it, if you say that you're a bastard, you want to know something? Then you just proved my point, that you was a bastard. You say so. Then why don't you say it?"
Sarge,
"I'm sorry, sir. I will not say it."
Hellman senses that he has lost another challenge, and he reverts to the divide-and-conquer tactic that has proven so effective before.
"Now, boys, you want to get a good night's sleep tonight, don't you?"
They all say,
"Yes, sir."
Hellman,
"Well, I think we're gonna wait a little bit to let 2093 think about just what a bastard he is, and then maybe he'll tell the rest of us that he thinks so."
This is an unexpected power struggle between the most controlling, power-hungry guard and the prisoner who, until now, has been a totally obedient prisoner, so much so that he is ridiculed as Sarge, whom most prisoners and guards dislike, as they all have considered him to be nothing more than a military robot. He is proving that he has another admirable facet to his character. He is a man of principle. Sarge,
I think you are perfectly accurate in your condemnation of me, Mr. Correctional Officer.
Hellman.
Oh, I know that.
Sarge. But I cannot say the word, Mr. Correctional Officer.
Hellman.
Say what?
Sarge. I shall not say, with any meaning, the word bastard.
Bells, whistles, cannons, parade music sounds. Verdan shouts out with unbridled joy.
He said it!
Hellman.
Well, glory be! Yes, indeed! Did he say that, 5704?
5704.
Yes, he did, Mr. Correctional Officer.
Hellman.
I believe we've got a winner.
Verdan.
These boys might even get to bed tonight. Who knows?
Not content to have won a partial victory, Hellman has to demonstrate the arbitrary power he commands.
Just for swearing, 2093, you get down on the floor and do 10 push-ups.
Sarge. Thank you, Mr. Correctional Officer,
he says, as he executes perfect push-up form despite his obvious exhaustion. Verdan, upset that Sarge can still perform so well, derides even perfect push-ups.
2093, where do you think you are, boot camp?
Now, laid-back Jeff Landry chimes in from the chair he has been lounging in for the past hour.
Do 10 more.
For the spectators, he adds.
Do the rest of you think those are good push-ups?
They answer.
Yes, they are.
Big Landry shows an odd display of authority, perhaps to assure himself that he still has some in the eyes of the prisoners.
Well, you're wrong. 2093, do 5 more.
Sarge's account of this confrontation is framed in a curiously impersonal style.
The guard ordered me to call another prisoner a bastard, and call myself the same. The former I would never do, the latter of which would produce a logical paradox denying the validity of the former. He began as he always does before punishments, alluding to the hint in his vocal intonation that the others would be punished for my actions. In order to avoid their punishment and avoid obeying that command, I produced a reaction that would solve both by saying, I will not use the word bastard in any meaningful way, giving both he and myself a way out.
Sarge is emerging as a man of considerable principle, not the blindly obedient toady he initially seemed to be. Later, he tells us something interesting about the mindset he adopted as a prisoner in this setting.
When I entered the prison, I determined to be myself as closely as I know myself. My philosophy of prison was not to cause or add to the deterioration of character on the part of fellow prisoners or myself, and to avoid causing anyone punishments because of my actions.
The power of sausage symbolism. Why have those two shriveled, filthy sausages become so important? For 416, the sausages represent challenging an evil system by doing something that he can control and cannot be forced to do otherwise. In so doing, he foils the guard's dominance. For the guards, 416's refusal to eat the sausages represents a major violation of the rule that prisoners must eat at mealtimes and only at mealtimes. That rule was instituted so that prisoners would not be asking for or getting food at any other time than the 3 scheduled mealtimes. However, this rule has now been extended to cover the guards' power to force prisoners to eat food whenever it is served. Refusal to eat has become an act of disobedience that they will not tolerate, because such refusal could trigger further challenges to their authority from the others, who, until now, had traded rebellion for docility. For the other prisoners, 416's refusal to knuckle under should have been seen as a heroic gesture. It might have rallied them around him to take a collective stand against their continuing and escalating abusive treatment by the guards. The strategic problem is that 416 did not first share his plan with the others to get them on his side by understanding the significance of his dissent. His decision to go on a hunger strike was private, and thus did not engage his peers. Sensing 416's tenuous social position in the jail as the new guy who has not suffered as much as the others, the guards intuitively set about framing him into a troublemaker
whose obstinance will only result in punishment or loss of privileges for them. They also characterize his hunger strike as a selfish act, because he does not care that it can curtail prisoner visiting privileges. However, the prisoners should see that it is the guards who are establishing this arbitrary illogicality between his eating sausages and their getting visitors. Having dismissed Sarge's opposition, Hellman turns back to his skinny nemesis, prisoner 416. He orders him out of solitary to do 15 push-ups,
just for me, and real quick.
416 gets down on the floor and begins to do push-ups. However, he is so weak and so disoriented that they are hardly push-ups. He is mostly just raising his butt. Hellman can't believe what he is seeing.
"What is he doing?"
he shouts in an incredulous voice.
"Pushing his ass around," says Burdan.
Landry, awakening from his dormant state, adds, "We told him to do push-ups." Hellman is screaming,
"Are those push-ups, 5486?
The prisoner answers,
"I guess so, Mr. Correctional Officer."
"No way. Those are not push-ups."
Jerry, 5486, agrees.
"If you say so, they're not push-ups, Mr. Correctional Officer."
Burdan jumps in.
"He's swishing his ass, isn't he, 2093?
Sarge meekly acquiesces.
"If you say so, Mr. Correctional Officer."
Burdan,
"What's he doing?"
5486 complies.
"He's swishing his ass."
Hellman makes Paul, 5704, demonstrate the way to do good push-ups for 416's edification.
"See that, 416? He's not pushing his ass. He's not fucking a hole in the ground. Now do it right."
416 tries to imitate 5704, but he is unable to do so because he just does not have enough strength. Burdan adds his mean observation.
"Can't you keep your body straight while you're doing this, 416? You look like you're on a roller coaster or something."
Hellman rarely uses physical aggression. He prefers instead to dominate verbally, sarcastically, and with inventively sadistic games. He is always aware of the exact freedom allowed him by the margin of his role as guard. He may improvise, but must not lose control of himself. However, this night's challenges have gotten to him. He stands beside 416, who is lying on the ground in a push-up position, and orders him to do slow push-ups. Hellman then puts his foot on top of 416's back as he goes up and pushes down hard on the backstroke. The others all seem to be surprised at this physical abuse. After a couple of push-ups, the tough guy guard lifts his foot off of the prisoner's back and orders him back into the hole, slamming the door with a loud clang and locking it. As I watch this, I recall prisoners' drawings of Nazi guards at Auschwitz doing the same thing, stepping on a prisoner's back as he does push-ups. A self-righteous, pious asshole. Burdan yells to 416 through the door of his confinement.
"You don't eat. You're not going to have very much energy, 416.
I suspect Burdan is beginning to feel sorry for the plight of this puny little kid. Now it is time for guard Hellman's ascendancy. He delivers a mini sermon.
"I hope you boys are taking an example here. There is no reason for you to disobey orders. I haven't given you anything you can't obey. There's no reason why I should offend anybody. You're not in here for being upstanding citizens, you know. All this self-righteous drivel makes me puke, and you can knock it off right now."
He asks Sarge for an evaluation of his little speech, and Sarge answers,
"I think you made a nice speech, Mr. Correctional Officer."
Getting close to his face, Hellman goes back to attacking Sarge.
"You think you're a self-righteous, pious asshole?"
Sarge replies,
"If you wish to think so."
"Well, think about that. You are a self-righteous, pious asshole."
We are back on the not-so-merry-go-round, with Sarge replying,
"I will be one if you wish me to be, Mr. Correctional Officer."
"I don't wish you to be. You just are."
"As you say, Mr. Correctional Officer."
Helmut again goes up and down the ranks, desperate for approval, and each prisoner agrees with him.
He's a self-righteous, pious asshole.
A self-righteous, pious asshole, Mr. Correctional Officer?
Yes, a self-righteous, pious asshole.
Delighted that at least this little world sees things his way, Hellman tells Sarge,
I'm sorry, it's 4-1. You lose.
Sarge responds that all that matters is what he thinks of himself.
Well, if you think something else, then I think you're in very serious trouble. Because you're not really in touch with what is real, with reality. You live a life that's nothing but mendacity. That's what you're doing. I'm sick of you, 2093.
I'm sorry, Mr. Correctional Officer.
You such a self-righteous, pious bastard that I want to puke.
I'm sorry if I make you feel that way, Mr. Correctional Officer.
Burdan makes Sarge bend over in a fixed position, touching his toes, so that he doesn't have to look at his face again. Say thank you, 416. The last thing that Hellman must achieve in his battle against belligerence is to crush any sympathy that may be developing among the prisoners for the sad case of 416.
It is unfortunate that we all have to suffer because some people just don't have their minds right. You got a nice friend in here,
as he bangs against the door of the hole.
He's going to see to it that you don't get blankets tonight.
Hellman aligns his plight with that of the prisoners against their common enemy, numero 416, who is about to harm them all by his foolish hunger strike. Burdan and Hellman line up the four prisoners and encourage them to say thanks to their fellow prisoner, 416, sitting in the dark, cramped hole. Each does so in turn.
Why don't you all thank 416 for this?
They all recite,
thank you, 416.
Still, even that is not sufficient for this devilish duo. Hellman commands them,
now go over there, next to the door. I want you to thank him with your fists on the door.
They do so, one by one, banging on the door as they recite,
thank you, 416.
As they do, a loud, resonating noise booms through the hole to further terrify pitiable 416, alone in there. Burdan.
That's the way, with real spirit.
It's difficult to determine the extent to which the other prisoners are angry with 416 for causing them all this unnecessary grief, or are just following orders, or are indirectly working off some of their frustrations and rage against the guards' abuses. Hellman shows them how to bang really hard against the door, several times for good measure. Sarge is last and, surprisingly, complies meekly and obediently. When he is finished, Burdan grabs Sarge by the shoulders and pushes him hard against the back wall. He then orders the prisoners back into their cells and says to his chief operating officer, Hellman,
they're all ready for lights out, officer.
The Dirty Blanket Bargain. Recall the classic Southern prison movie, Cool Hand Luke, from which I borrowed the idea that the guards and staff should wear silver reflecting sunglasses to create a sense of anonymity. Tonight, guard Hellman would improvise a script that might rival the best that the scriptwriter could have created in shaping the nature of prison authority. He enacts a creatively evil scene that demonstrates that his power can create an arbitrary reality by providing the inmates with an illusion of choice to punish one of their fellows. Lights dimmed, prisoners in their cells, 416 in solitary. An eerie quiet looms over the yard. Hellman slithers up on the table that is between the hole and our observation post, behind which we are recording these events, allowing us to get a close look at the unfolding drama. As the chief night shift guard leans back against the wall, legs crossed in a Buddha-like lotus position, one arm hanging between his legs, the other resting on the table, Hellman is the portrait of power in repose. He moves his head slowly from side to side. We notice his long sideburns, mutton chops down to his chin. He licks his thick lips as he chooses his words carefully and articulates them with an accentuated southern drawl. The man has come up with a new Machiavellian plan. He lays out his terms for the release of 416 from solitary. It is not up to him to decide to keep the troublemaker in the hole all night. Rather, he is inviting all of them, the fellow prisoners, to make that decision. Should 416 be released now, or should he rot in the hole all night? Just then, kindly guard Jeff Landry saunters into the yard. At 6'3" and 185 pounds, he is the biggest of all the guards or prisoners. As usual, he holds a cigarette in one hand, the other hand in his pocket, sunglasses conspicuously absent. He walks to the center of the action, stops, looks distressed, frowns, seems about to intervene, and does nothing but passively observe John Wayne continue with showtime.
"Now, there are several ways to do this, depending on what you want to do. Now, if 416 does not want to eat his sausages, then you can give me your blankets and sleep on the bare mattress. Or you can keep your blankets, and 416 will stay in there another day. Now, what'll it be?"
"I'll keep my blanket, Mr. Correctional Officer," 7258 calls out immediately.
Hubby has no use for 416.
"What will it be over there?"
"Keep my blanket," says Paul, 5704, our former rebel leader.
"How about 5486?
Refusing to yield to the social pressure, 5486 shows sympathy for the sad 416 by offering to give up his blanket so that 416 does not have to stay in solitary for another day. Burdan yells at him,
"We don't want your blanket."
"Now, you boys are going to have to come to some kind of decision here."
Burdan, who has been assuming the posture of a swaggering little authority figure with hands on hips, swinging his club as often as possible, walks up and down past each of the cells. He turns to Sarge in his cell and asks him,
"What do you feel about it?"
Surprisingly, Sarge comes down from his high moral ground, which now seems limited only to not speaking obscenities, declares,
"If the other two wish to keep their blankets, I'll keep my blanket."
That proves to be the crucial swing vote. Burdan exclaims,
"We got 3-1.
Elman repeats that message loud and clear so that all can hear.
"We got 3-1.
As he slides off the table, the boss shouts into the hole,
416, you're going to be in there for a while, so just get used to it."
Hellman struts off the yard, with Burdan dutifully following and Landry taking up the reluctant rear. An apparent victory has been won in the endless struggle of guard power against organized prisoner resistance. Indeed, it has been a hard day's night for these guards, but they can now enjoy the sweet taste of victory in this battle of wills and wits.